Hello and welcome to Journey of the Monkey King. As always, I'm Quiva and I'm joined by my friend MJ.
Hello!
So, in terms of warnings, this episode is going to have arson, attempted murder, suicide, and more use of the magical torture headband.
Okay. Yeah, arson and attempted murder sounded quite fun, actually. You lost me on the... I did not enjoy the usage of the magical torture headband, but I see why it gets its own warning.
It's the kind of thing. It's not gonna come up every chapter, but it's gonna happen once in a while at least.
Consider yourself warned.
So the Heavenborn Stone Monkey, the Handsome Monkey King, Sun Wukong, the Banhorse Plague, the Great Sage Equal to Heaven, Pilgrim Sun, and Chen Xuanzang, River Float, the Gold Cicada, Grand Expositor of the Fate, Supreme Vicar of Priests, the Tang Monk, Tripitaka,
and Blackboard Monitor
have been on the road to India for several months when, in the early spring, they come to the Guanyin Shanhal Temple.
Oh shit, they're in her house now.
It's grand and majestic and described in loving detail, and the monk who greets them is frightened by Sun Wukong's appearance, but Tripitaka reassures him that that's his disciple, and while he may be ugly, he's very useful.
I'm sure the Handsome Monkey King loved that.
So the two of them are brought in for tea, and they're joined by the abbot of the monastery, and when they talk about the pilgrimage, the abbot remarks that he's 270 years old, and he regrets that he has never even left the grounds of the temple.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's a bit ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, I could barely stomach being inside for 6 months. Oof. Oh, I kind of want to just give him a hug. Get him some ice cream, maybe.
That'd probably blow his mind.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be the best use of a time machine, I think.
just giving people in the past ice cream.
Yes. Yeah, just go back and just see. I don't know. I'm sure there was like a comparable sweet treat that was probably very good in China at this point. There's a wonderful Twitter account called Chaucer Doth Tweet, which has been tweeting out medieval baking recipes in honor of the Great British Bake Off starting again, which we hope will save us all. And yeah, some of them look pretty good. So I imagine, I imagine it wouldn't be as mind blowing. I think it would be the highlight of someone's day, though.
Yeah, that's really, really far back,
maybe could blow someone's mind, like at the right latitude as well.
Yeah, well, I imagine the like just having you know, something frozen in the middle of summer, I think, would be a novelty.
Yeah.
It depends. I know there's a lot of very old practice of using ice houses and such in various places as well, but...
Yeah. Yeah, so not as entertaining as I thought when I began this train of thought, but I think it's still probably a nice thing to do. You know, if a time traveler popped out from behind your wardrobe right now and just gave you a 99, would you not be happy?
Yeah, if there's anyone with a time machine who is listening to this 1,000 years from now, I would appreciate future ice cream.
I would also appreciate future ice cream. Assuming there's A, ice cream in the future, and B, a future.
Oh, let's not get that. Grim okay. about
no,
things.
No. Back to the monk.
When the tea is served, Tripitaka can't stop complimenting both the tea and the crockery, which is very fancy. It's made of jade and gold and white copper.
I love when this guy gets on to his interior decorating buzz. Love it.
Maybe I should be reading more of the poems then. The abbot insists it's all rubbish. He's being very humble about things. Tripitaka has come from the court of a great nation. Surely he's rare treasures with him. But Tripitaka says he doesn't have anything. But Wukong brings up the magic cassock. And all the monks around start laughing at the idea of a coat being a treasure.
Wow, they have no taste. Also, I love that the abbot basically went, thanks, pennies.
Yeah, pretty much. The abbot has himself has over 700 very fancy Cossacks, apparently. And to prove the point, he has a dozen of them brought out and hung up to display while they're eating.
It's a flex. It's definitely a flex.
Yeah, Monkey laughs and he's excited to show them up with their own magic robes. But Tripitaka pulls him aside and tells him to, not make these kinds of boasts. If they show off like this, people might be tempted to rob them.
It's a very fair point.
Monkey promises to take all responsibility for the matter and pulls out the cassock to show it off because he can't resist.
Yeah. Actually, what Tripitaka is saying about being robbed in a monastery full of presumably monks, like what does that say about his own upbringing?
Yeah, I mean, he
What
grew up
happened to you in there?
he grew up in a monastery, like from the, like he was 2 or 3 days old. He lived for 18 years in a monastery.
So if he says you can get robbed in a monastery, we should believe him.
The cassock is so beautiful that the abbot starts crying immediately. He laments that his eyes aren't great and he can hardly see it in the dark as it's getting late.
Aww.
Tripitaka suggests just bringing over some lamps, but then the abbot says that the robe is already so dazzling. If they light lamps, it'll be so bright he won't be able to see it, which definitely makes sense. So he asks to take it back to his room so he can spend the night looking at it and he can give it back in the morning and he'll definitely give it back.
I mean, with sensory stuff, I can see, yes, sometimes it's too bright for you to see things, but Okay, yeah, something's not adding up here.
So Tripitaka basically tells Monkey, I told you so. But Wukong's not worried. He says if there's any trouble, he'll take care of it. It's fine. And Tripitaka and Monkey are given beds to sleep in the Chan Hall while the abbot retires to his room with the cassock, where he sits looking at it and just crying.
Wow.
Yeah, he's really upset over like having wasted his life not having a really fancy magic cassock.
I mean, he the man likes nice things.
So two of his favorites show up to ask him what's wrong, and yeah, he wants to keep the robes forever. Just one night with them isn't enough. They're too beautiful. So one of his disciples, named Great Wisdom, suggests sneaking up on their guests while they're asleep and stabbing them to death and burying them in the backyard so they can keep the robes.
Whoa.
Yeah, this escalated very quickly.
Yeah, it did. It did. Guess every religion has their unmarked graves, huh?
So the other disciple, whose name is Big Plan, thinks that's too risky. He's not sure if they can take on Sun Wukong. So he has a much safer plan in mind. Set the building they're in on fire and burn them to death.
The monkey's made of stone, isn't he?
He definitely was when he was born. I'm like, he's I'm between all the immortality stuff and everything, and the way that like the kind of enlightenment and immortality is like also a change to your body in this story. And they talk about people like becoming human and attaining human form and everything. I'm not really sure that counts or matters or is relevant at this point.
Yeah, okay. Still a lot of collateral damage for one robe, it must be said.
Meanwhile, Pilgrim Sun has not actually gone to sleep. He's staying up to do some breathing exercises when he starts to hear the sound of a bunch of monks outside the doors running around and piling up firewood. Doesn't want to wake Tripitaka, so instead of trying the doors, he turns into a bee and flies up to the rafters and crawls outside to have a look. So yeah, he sees a bunch of monks piling up firewood, and he smiles to himself as he realizes that Tripitaka was actually right. So he figures that if he tries to attack them directly, he'll end up killing them, and Tripitaka will be pissed off. So he comes up
Yeah.
with a different plan. He leaps away from the temple and straight up to the South Heaven Gate. And the Heavenly Guard's reaction to this is basically, oh shit, it's him.
This fucker's back.
But the great sage, Equal to Heaven, says there's no need to be alarmed. He's just looking for Virupaksha, the broad-eyed Devaraja. And Virupaksha shows up and asks Wukong why he's here. Isn't he, you know, doesn't he have a job now? Isn't he meant to be on a pilgrimage? But
why aren't you working?
Pretty much. He asks, like, how do you have the leisure time to do this? Wukong explains he wants to borrow Virupaksha's fire-repelling cover to protect Tripitaka from the fire. And Virupaksha asks, you know, why don't you just go get some water to put the fire out? But Wukong explains he doesn't want to put the fire out. He just wants to stop it killing Tripitaka specifically.
Yeah, I mean, that way they get to burn down their own hall. Fuck you guys.
So Virupaksha laughs and says Wukong still has an evil mind, but he gives him the cover anyway.
Yep.
And Wukong returns to the temple and uses it to protect the hall and Tripitaka inside. And then uses his magic to summon a wind to help whip up the fires and spread it to the rest of the monastery instead. So he sits himself up on the roof of the abbot's quarters at the back to make sure the fire doesn't spread to where the Cossack is actually being held, but otherwise he just sits back and enjoys the show as the monastery burns down and all the monks flee in terror.
Yeah, I can picture him toasting marshmallows.
He is a complete bastard and I love him.
I love that. I love that. He's so much more of a likable bastard now.
So, like, when he's pulling shit like this and not just, like, threatening to beat random people because he's annoyed.
Mm-hmm.
So the next morning, after the fire burns itself out and all of the monks of the monastery are trying to erect a temporary shelter in the burnt-out husk of the buildings, Wukong goes to return the fire-repelling cover and then goes to wake up Tripitaka, who is alarmed to find out that the rest of the temple has burned down while he was asleep.
As you would be a bit.
Yeah. So Monkey explains that he protected the hall from the fire, and Tripitaka asks him, why didn't you put out the fire in the other buildings? So that you could learn the truth. Just like you said, they wanted to steal the cassock and tried to burn us to death. If I hadn't saved us, we would have been reduced to ashes. So the other monks set the fire. Well, who else would have? You.
Ooh.
Would I do such a horrible thing? It really was them who set the fire. I admit I didn't help them put it out. I might have provided a little wind instead. Tripitaka's reaction is literally just, oh my god. If they hadn't played with fire, I wouldn't have played with wind. That's true.
It's fair.
So Tripitaka asks, where is the cassock? Was it burnt? No, I made sure the fire didn't spread to the abbot's quarters. At this point, Tripitaka started to get really pissed off. He just shouts, I don't care. If there's even the slightest damage to it, I'm going to recite that spell until it kills you.
Ooh.
So Wukong just shouts, Master, don't. I'll go get it and we can leave. And I've abridged the dialogue a bit there, but I'm trying to keep it to the spirit, at least.
Yeah, yeah.
So Wukong heads outside and he demands the monks of the monastery go get the cassock for him. And some of them go to the abbot's chambers to grab it, but it's not there. The abbot is there, or his body is. He's after killing himself by ramming his head against the wall.
Oh,
yeah.
That's facepalm to the extreme. Or was he just trying to run away from the fire?
Oh, no, he intentionally killed himself after he saw the temple burning down.
Ah.
He intentionally just rammed his head against the wall really hard to kill himself. It's...
I mean, we've all felt... No.
Yeah, let's not try to make light of this bit too much.
No. No.
So when they go back to Wukong and tell them this, he assumes one of them must have stolen it, and he demands a roll of all the names of all 230 monks in the monastery and searches all of them one by one, but none of them have it. And they hunt through all the chests and trunks that survived the fire, but it's nowhere to be found. Eventually, Tripitaka gets frustrated enough with this to start reciting the tight fillet spell, and Monkey falls to the ground in pain, and he begs Tripitaka to stop and promises to find it.
He's doing his best.
Tripitaka stops, and Monkey whips out the rod in anger and goes to attack the monks in the monastery, but Tripitaka shouts at him to stop. And Tripitaka questions the monks further about the cassock, but none of them have a clue where it is. Monkey sits in silence for a while before he comes up with an idea, and he asks the monks if there's any monster spirits who live nearby. And there is one 20 miles to the southeast. There's the Black Wind Mountain, which has in the Black Wind Cave where the Black Wind King lives. And the abbot and him were actually friends, interestingly enough.
Huh. So he's not too happy about this turn of events as he sits on his Black Wind chair, sipping his Black Wind cup of tea.
Wukong reckons that he must have seen the fire and come to check it out before stumbling across the cassock and running off with it. So he tells the monks to tend to his master while he goes to investigate, and they'd better serve him like royalty or else. And he punctuates this by smashing down one of the remaining walls, which causes 7 or 8 more walls around it to collapse.
Oof.
And he heads off to the Black Wind Mountain to investigate.
He's a no-half-measures kind of guy.
Yeah. This is actually a pretty quick one. So, Guanyin is not... does not actually live in this temple. It's just a temple dedicated to her.
Oh, yeah. Shit, she's going to be pissed. It makes more sense that he'd want it to burn... That Monkey wouldn't mind too much seeing it burning down now, but... this is not going to end well for them, is it?
Well, spoilers. But I did skip over one section of the chapter to draw attention a bit. So the Black Wind King did steal the robes. That happens actually in order. So that is revealed like as it happens.
That seems like it would have been relevant information there.
Yeah, well, I wanted to draw out the tension about where did it go. So if you actually read this yourself, you would have known that happened before they found them missing. There is a little section where the Black Wind King sees the fire in the distance, and he actually initially heads over to help until he notices Wukong sitting on the roof at the back where there's no fire, and thought that looked suspicious and decided to have a look, which is when he found the cassock and ran off with it.
Well, I'm never going to trust again. So... that's okay.
I'm not holding off like I'm not like skipping contents of like of the whole chapter. I just put it in a slightly different order for tension.
Sure.
There's also a poem describing the fire that references Sui Ren, which the footnotes describe as the Chinese Prometheus, who invented fire by rubbing sticks together, which seems less like a Prometheus story and more just like crediting the guy who invented fire the way fire would actually be invented.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't steal it from anyone. He just kind of made it happen.
And the name Sui Ren, just like those, I looked it up, those characters can mean kind of a bunch of different things, but basically just like fire person.
Fire person, I like it.
Like, there's a bunch of different ways to translate Ren other than person, and I'm sure there's a lot of detail you could go into on that and to what's the correct interpretation. But, I don't have a clue. His Wikipedia article is very short.
Okay, that is fair.
There's no other source of information in the world.
No, Wikipedia knows all, and we should not look beyond it, for to look beyond it would be heresy of a Promethean order, and I don't want to have my liver torn out by an eagle forever. The eagle would be very sick.
I think Wikipedia actually gives the meaning as fire maker, but
Yeah, that's actually that's something I'm kind of thinking about. Does the liver grow back like healthy?
I don't know. I mean, liver is one of those organs that can regenerate a lot if you don't cut out the entire thing.
If the liver is being torn out by an eagle, does it grow back like the same as it was before it was torn out?
Do you think he has like might have like a really calloused liver?
I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out if my liver would kill an eagle. It's not important. It's not. I've done it some serious damage. It's not important to the story. We'll continue.
So you think you're wondering if an eagle ate your liver, would you get back a healthier one?
Yes, exactly. And would that eagle be okay? Because you could probably get away with doing it once.
Yeah,
You know.
well, don't be like one of those farmers that sets out poison for eagles.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't stolen fire from the gods, so it's a bit of a moot point. Anyway, yeah, on with the story. We will move on.
Oh, that was the end of the chapter.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Him going off to investigate the Blackwind Mountain is the end of the chapter.
Grand. Okay, we are on a cliffhanger. We are on a black wind cliffhanger.
I bridged this one a bit because there was just kind of a lot of slow dialogue and back and forth.
And poetry.
And poetry. Not huge compared to some other chapters, but there was some, yeah. And I do have one other note. You laughed at the name Big Plan and Great Wisdom.
Yep.
They're good names, but there's a poem in the chapter that warns against kind of trying to get something the easy way by stealing and taking shortcuts. And the na and it uses like big the phrases Big Plan and Great Wisdom in that poem, so then it kind of ties back to their names
Ah.
in kind of I don't know, literalizing it. So I'll read the second half of that poem, just to get the point across. If you think what endures can come with ease, yours will be sure failure and certain grief. Big plan, great wisdom, of what use are they to gain by others' loss, what empty dreams.
Huh.
So don't try and take shortcuts and steal from people.
No, because a monkey will burn your house down.
Well, you will burn your own house down,
Yeah, and they'll just watch.
and a monkey will fan the flames, quite literally.
Ooh. Okay, well that's very cool. I'm excited to see what happens when we get to this cave.
The I don't know, I don't think it's a spoiler, but just kind of for a bit of excitement or a bit of detail anyway, the Blackwind King is a black bear who has become a
Ah, okay.
monster.
There seems to be a lot of large predators who become monsters.
One of them was a bull.
Yeah, that's true.
So just large animals in general, I guess.
Yeah, you gotta wonder what that path is like.
So next week we'll have a monkey fighting a bear monster.
Yay, monkey versus bear.
You know, if it was a normal monkey versus a normal bear, I think I'd know which animal I'd put my money on.
Does the monkey have a knife?
He has a metal rod that weighs like 8 cars.
Oh no, if it was a normal monkey, does the monkey have a knife? 'Cause that, if the monkey has a knife, my money's on the monkey. If not, bear all the way.
I think you really underestimate how massive bears are.
They're really massive. Have you ever seen a monkey with a knife?
I mean, that's a scary idea, but like monkeys are smaller than and generally
And a
weaker than
knife's a knife.
people. Okay, would you fight a bear with a knife?
Me?
Because you are probably stronger than a given monkey.
I would doubt that. I would doubt that. I have weak floppy arms. Very weak floppy arms.
But yeah, please listen to the next time when monkey fights a bear.
Monkey versus bear! Woo! Awesome.